Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from over 30 years combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group and Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks. We are live at commandcontrolpower.com, the first Tuesday of every month, where new episodes are posted weekly. Thanks for listening. So Sam, everybody is waiting on the edge of their seat for some follow-up about that client router issue. And I guess your Mac, I mean, the even sketchier thing was your Mac somehow ended up with some DNS entries populated. Do you have any follow-up on that? Anything that came to mind?
I felt like a helpless end user, I have to say, just not knowing why they appeared. And then, of course, you know, Jerry had mentioned previous experience with that. I actually got off the phone with the client a little bit earlier today. He had been traveling for a while because he goes to on-site in different locations. So he hadn't been back in his office. We had a bunch of things to discuss. The router issue is not resolved. However, I told him what I needed. Obviously, we need to be able to log into that device. And I thought it was worth mentioning to bring it up with his ISP of our thoughts. But the interesting thing is, because of his speed issues, his router was actually replaced recently, a couple of weeks before I got there. So those speed issues were persistent before that modem/router was in there and continue. And it just makes me wonder, because, you know, Jerry was mentioning that was one of the side effects is, you know, it could, because it's sending you somewhere halfway across the world for DNS and things like that, where it could be affecting your performance. So thinking that this has persisted through two different devices, obviously I still don't have the login to confirm anything, but that's a little concerning. He just got back last night. We just talked today. I don't have a lot of follow-up except to say that it's still a bit strange in the fact that the other devices on his network did not have those manual entries. To be continued, I don't want to let this drop by any stretch of the imagination. He's a great guy, but been a little bit difficult because I came in there for a minor internal network. I shouldn't say minor, a little emergency. What he's been doing up until me, and it seems to be a little bit past me, is he has like a nephew of some friend that's been helping him. Right? We've all heard this. I know that. This is old. You know, we've all been through this. But, you know, he wanted to have two Synologies basically mirror to each other offsite. Like, we can use rsync to make that happen. And I told him that would be possible, and because his friend's nephew had said that we should do that. And I said, sure, that should be possible. We need to set it up properly, blah, blah, blah. And I talked to him today about that, among other things. He said, I put it in the other place. What can we do? I can't get to it. I'm like, well, of course you can't get to it. Nothing's been configured.
Right. We didn't do the thing yet.
Yeah. So I said, listen, if you really want to have this kid help you out, whatever, but we need to be on the same page. I can't be working and then he says to do this and do that and we overstep each other and start making changes. So I said, put me in touch with him. That's the first thing we need to do. Right. This is just ridiculous.
Well, considering he's basically your boss now, this kid of the nephew of the whatever, he's kind of like dictating what your job, your tasks now. That's really...
Well, I gotta, not to ramble on about this, but this is a very, and I've only seen this gentleman once. Again, really, actually kind of a fun guy to be around, but this whole thing is like unraveling this big mess. So the reason why he has this kid working with him is he has a bunch of old Epson printers with this ancient old Epson RIP software that won't go past, I think it was 10.3, so, or 10.4, maybe it was Tiger. So he can't update the RIP workstation that he does a lot of his work on and doesn't want to spend, and I get this is like over $10,000 for this, for new equipment and RIP software. So he has this kid building him a virtual, like on a new computer, a VM running 10.3 to be able to emulate this RIP software and run it, because he needs to upgrade his stuff, but he can't, he's hamstrung by this RIP software.
Wow.
So I'm like, oh man, this is like, I'm like, I don't want to touch that. I don't want to even come near that.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to have him keep doing that, that's fine. You're not on contract with us. We're not doing MSP. You know, this was a one-time call essentially, but this, when I the hours that I spent with him unraveled so much stuff that he's got going on there that the router was just yet another piece in the whole pie.
Oh, man.
So it's been crazy.
Yeah, that's complicated when you've got this outsider who's been making recommendations and, you know, and maybe they've been mostly successful, you know, and then you're coming in and he's like, well, this kid's doing this and such, and you almost don't want to throw a wrench into it. It takes a lot of effort to actually like assess someone else's recommendation versus the original request versus like coming in and just saying like, here's, you know, thinking about it from scratch. Like, here's how I might handle it. You know, it's like more work to actually assess whether the other person has the right idea or not and whether to like, you know, jump in and maybe make an alternate recommendation. So it's better, like you're saying, basically not even to touch it at all and just to say, okay, like, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to say yes or no, but just let it proceed for better or worse in that regard. It's not like you're answering to the other person, but you have to address it in some way. You know, like I had this happen coincidentally last week. I had a call from a client I hadn't heard from in a couple of years and we had worked with her a few times and you know, and that happens and whatever, and they're self-sufficient or whatever. But she called and said, I got a new Mac and I'm not seeing my folders. And I'm thinking it could be anything simple from like, well, you just click show next on my Mac, you know, or something like that in mail. Or like, who knows, maybe she didn't migrate. I don't know what the story is. So I get her on the phone and she's like, well, my, I have this guy, you know, who I've been working with and he's away. So, you know, I'm calling you and I'm already feeling like insulted. You know, you're calling me, I'm like your second choice. Like, and I'm supposed to come in and like try to figure out, you know, she said, so he migrated my data and blah, blah, blah. And just unraveling like the situation alone was complicated enough to try to figure out how he did the migration, why wouldn't it have been complete? Why, when I look at her Time Machine backup, it's only as old as like the date when this all happened. It turned out he set up a new hard drive just to back up the old computer to then migrate to the new computer. And it's all just super confusing. I'm trying to figure out like whether it made any sense or not and whether I would have done it that way. And I'm like answering to, you know, her questions about like, why is this way? Why is it that way? And I'm like trying to answer for this guy who I don't even know. And it's just, you know, it, like before you can even start to work, you're kind of like sort of like defending the other guy. And I'm already like insulted. I'm like, I'd rather just, why don't you call him then? You know, like, wait till he gets back from vacation or whatever.
Yeah, that is, it is a little bit, sometimes it could be bothersome. And the other biggest issue about this is, and I've said this a few times before, is you don't want to necessarily insult or say anything negative about what the person did. Right. But in this case, it's like a young kid who's kind of learning his way and specifically doing one thing with this VM, but giving recommendations on network advice. And it doesn't help the situation. And the kid admittedly is like, I don't know much about networking stuff, but do this.
Right.
I'm like, come on, man.
So it just confuses the issue. Cause then you're like, well, I wouldn't do that for this reason. And now he's like, well, why not? You know, and then you're like going down this road that you shouldn't have even been on in the first place.
Yeah. It's difficult. So we'll see what happens out of the next conversation. I asked him for a few of those pieces of information for the router login, if he has it, and we'll take those next steps as we investigate it. And plus, he's already on the path of switching ISPs, but it's, you know, it's there is a lot of stuff to unravel there. And the guy kind of has some of his own personal knowledge of stuff that he tries to tinker as well. So who knows if this will be an ongoing client, because that can turn into just a tricky mess. So to be continued. I'll give everyone an update as it goes along, because I know it is kind of a hot topic and it's an important one too. So as soon as I find out anything, I'll be sure to clue you guys in.
So Sam, one clue on there was that you said that he had switched the router in trying to fix this. Like in other words, like the modem and router had already been replaced and the speed was slow from the start. You know, here we were thinking like Jerry's a theory was like that, you know, this could have been a compromised router, and that was explaining the low speeds, and then that also explained the DNS entries and so on. But, you know, maybe it doesn't add up because they've, like, pulled out the router itself, and, you know, the speed was already slow before that. I'm wondering, like, is there some other device that's in the mix that may be responsible? Like, maybe it's not the router, but maybe it's, like, ARP poisoning or something like that that's going on.
Right. There could be another device on the network and we would definitely have to investigate it further. We just have not had the chance to yet. So yeah, if once we investigate that router, if we see that if everything's on the up and up, we have to start looking around at the rest of the network and seeing, first of all, doing a scan and see what other devices show up, start identifying all those devices, and then pick up what they're running, doing a sweep on each of those, whether they be Macs or I think it's just Macs in that office. But he does have multiple computers. When I've talked to him, he starts pulling a couple more out of a bag, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what's going on here? So it's a really big, intricate mess to get around, and one day on site does not do enough justice to kind of dive deeper into the issue.
Right. Yeah, it's really frustrating too. Sometimes these people will bring you in and they figure that you're the heavy hitter and you could just come in and wave a magic wand across the network and make everything right. And sometimes, you know, through discovery, it takes repeated visits to really make sure that all their operations are running well.
Yeah. And to the repeated visits answer, we agreed initially, and he has no problem with our rates or anything, but we agreed initially to go hourly because he wasn't ready to just jump into a contract. But once he got his bill, he's like, well, if we're going to keep working together, we got to figure something out a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I sent you the contract info and said, let's go that route instead. He's like, all right, send it to me again. I'm like, okay, I'll send it to you again. But it's like, and like I said, the guy seems like he's a cool personality, but just he's a chore to deal with on a business end. And it's just becoming one difficulty after another.
Yeah, we've had similar clients like that, and a lot of times they're professional people, and they like to, like you said, this user likes to dabble, and I can think of an attorney that matches that description, and they only want you to come in and try to fix a lot of their transgressions that have passed across their network, and some of them you don't even discover until days later. So it's a real frustrating situation, and sometimes, like you said, when there's somebody else who's giving advice like Lucy sitting in front of the psychiatrist's booth for 5 cents, that doesn't help your situation either.
Right.
Speaking of these long appointments, how do you guys feel about spending a whole day somewhere? Do you sort of max out at a certain point? How do you maintain your energy level? Do you take a break halfway through?
I get brain fried at the same place. I could never work in an office because I just want to move on and do other stuff. And when I have to spend, and there are sometimes that I do an entire day there, I definitely need to step out for lunch. I've had periods in the past where I would just work through because I wanted to get all my stuff done. Mm-hmm. And now I just realized I need a brain break and just out of here for a few minutes. And I will walk or if I'm in the city, or drive off to the nearest spot and just take a breather for a bit just to be out of there, and then step back in and be a little bit more fresh to work on the rest of the day.
Oh, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din. I go into these power mode camel mode where I don't break for lunch. I feel like sometimes if I do break for lunch, I get off point, and I might have the whole day open where it's not like I've got stacked appointments and I'm worried about getting out of there and moving on to the next. But I have this compulsion, and I guess it's part of my personality, just to get it done and get past it. And I often cannot step away. I don't think it's been to my detriment to not step away. I mean, I do sometimes feel fatigued around 3:30, 4 if I'm at something, you know, since 8:30 in the morning, but sometimes the day will just fly by and you don't even have that luxury of taking that break. It's logistics too. Sometimes your gig, Sam, where you're in the city, you're able to, you know, get out and hit the sidewalk and maybe just grab something at the place down in the corner. But a lot of my visits are rural visits where you're stuck in some either standalone office building or some expanded space that the client's using. And there's really no opportunity to break for lunch unless you actually brought your own ham sandwich.
Cliff Bars.
So, or Dash egg cooker. You know, you could make some hard-boiled eggs. You could actually bring it with you to the job site and cook some hard-boiled egg, you know, while the client is there.
I found on Groupon an egg peeler that I was going to send to you, Jerry, because I thought it'd be a perfect accompaniment to this device you have.
Right. Keep the egg theme going through the next like 10 shows. That's what I say.
That's a good plan. Yeah. I love how the big podcasts are sponsored by, you know, the mattress companies and the, you know, expensive clothing and stuff like that. And we're like talking about egg cookers for free. It's
like we're sponsored by the incredible edible egg.
Right. Exactly.
$19 egg cookers. Yeah.
It's a PSA. Yeah. Well, that'll for eggs. Yeah.
So the Mac Defender will be on one sleeve, Mac Keeper will be on the other sleeve of the commemorative t-shirt, and Dash egg cookers will be on the back.
Right.
I hear that's trending right now on Twitter, hashtag egg cooker.
Nice. We have a lot of pull. We have a lot of influence there. Oh, man. Well, yeah, so this topic came up recently where Tim went to an appointment last week. We had a list. We had a whole list prepared. We had prioritized and planned out very specifically. You know, we were planning on him being there 3 to 4 hours. They're about 45 minutes away or so. You know, we were like ready to go. We had reviewed the list with the client. Everything was all, it should have been a nice, smooth appointment, well planned. And he got there and they said, well, we have this whole other list that we haven't even sent you. Ha ha. Surprise kind of thing. And so, you know, he did the best he could prioritizing and getting done the things that, you know, they said were a priority and we knew to be a priority. Ended up spending the entire day there. He hadn't been planning on it. We weren't planning on that in his schedule. And we had to kind of scramble to make it work. The outcome was he spent the whole day there. He caught a cold. It was, you know, it had an impact on the last couple of days. There needs to be a policy around this. You know, if we're sending a consultant out to a job, there's an expectation on, and there should be an expectation on both sides that, you know, this we're allotting, I think the terminology we're going to use is, you know, Tim is confirmed for an on-site appointment on such and such a day and time, and we're allotting 2 to 3 hours for this appointment, or 3 to 4, or 1 to 2 in most cases, you know. And that gives the client an understanding that this is how much time we've set aside for this appointment. You know, we include the list in that confirmation email, so they know kind of what we're expecting to work on. They should not expect him to be available or us to be available past that whatever number of hours mark. That's their opportunity to write back and say, well, we've got a whole list here. Maybe we should schedule another visit subsequent to that or whatever and kind of go from there. But I think there needs to be like an expectation setting. So the client is aware that this is not like an open-ended, you know, visit, and they're just going to save up their questions, you know, in secret and like hit us with it when we get there. It's just not efficient. You know, you haven't really thought it through. We don't know. There's a scramble to then reprioritize everything. It's just inconsiderate, I think, when we don't know in advance kind of what we're going to be dealing with. So anyway, that's our takeaway is like this needs to be planned from the beginning. Allotted a certain amount of time. To me, past about 3 to 4 hours, you really reach a point of diminishing returns where for each additional hour, you're maybe spending like two, you know, an hour and a half of effort or something like that to get the same result. So it doesn't work in the client's interest to keep going and going. Although I have the same tendency that you have, Jerry, where, you know, I sometimes just put my head down and work and get through it because I remember reading back in the while back about programming. It's like once you have the problem loaded in your brain, like you've kind of spent the first like hour to get a full picture of everything, and you have this the full understanding. The big picture is loaded in your brain, and maybe you've got a task you're working on or a bigger project, and it's fresh in your mind. And to like say, okay, I'm going to, you know, arbitrarily stop in 2 hours to go take a break. That's inefficient too. So there's, I think the right solution is sort of like somewhere in between there, but it's an important thing to consider.
I know exactly what you guys are talking about. I've gotten into those modes where it's just like, I got to bang this out. I got to get this done. This is important stuff. But there have been days where I come in because we do more maintenance visits now where we have the MSP. We're going to come in on this day and just do updates or check on little things. And those days I can easily break away. And that's what the MSP model has afforded me, I think, is that when we have those non-pressure visits where we're just supposed to be there, there's no big issue that we have to deal with, I can go in there for a few hours, take a break, take my lunch, enjoy it, and go back in and start getting back to work. But there are certainly those days that are just head down, work hard, don't even stop for water kind of thing.
To your point, Joe, you're absolutely correct. This is akin to, I could think of the analogy where you're going into the dentist's office for a cleaning and the dentist cleans your teeth, and in examining your teeth, the hygienist finds a couple more cavities. Well, you can't be expected as the dentist to all of a sudden perform repairs on those cavities at the same time that you were scheduled for a cleaning. You've got to come back and we'll do that in another service. And as a client, you can't simply whip a list out of your pocket saying, oh, well, I really want to have a, you know, teeth whitening program. I want that to happen today, too. It's just right. Unreasonable. And I think you're running a professional organization and it's a reasonable expectation. I do agree with you that, you know, there are diminishing returns. You know, you kind of hit this decrease in performance, but, you know, I would never share that with a client.
Right.
I would charge them double.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good analogy, though. I mean, why is there this expectation that, like, we're going to show up and just have, you know, an open-ended time? Like you said, they probably would not be expecting the dentist to just, you know, be able to just take whatever they ask for at that point and just do it and drop everything else. At the same time, other clients are very considerate. And we walk in and, you know, they're like, you know, hey, we, you know, I'm like dropping off a Mac, and they're like, do you, you know, do you have time for some training? I just have a few questions. You know, if not, you can do, we can do this another day. You know, that's like really considerate that, like, you know, right. And I'll say, well, I've got about an hour. Sure. You know, no problem. And it's like, now we're on the same page. It just, I don't know. And, but for other people, I think it just has to do with personality. You know, some people are just less sort of considerate like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also that maybe lack of understanding that, you know, well, maybe we'll present this too. And maybe we can get, you know, derive more value from the visit because we've got these extra tasks that we want to have done as well. So we could get two lists for the price of one.
Yeah.
I'm sure that thinking doesn't all go in that regard, but certainly it's just lack of knowledge, establishing upfront, this is the hours that we're allotting for our visit. If we need to come back on site to reschedule for more, we'd have to do that on a different day.
Right. That's the while I have you. We joke about that here at SIMAC all the time, that the while I have you, you know, it's like you're on the phone and they had a quick question and you just know, I'll take this call right now because the printer needs to be like paused and resumed or whatever. And you just expect, you know, it's going to take 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And it's the while I have you that they introduced that, like, you know, I lost this important document and it just, you know, this open-ended thing where you're just like, okay, now I've got to drop everything and while you have me, I've got to just solve all your problems, you know? Like, I'm sorry I answered the phone right now. Some clients do that and others are like way more considerate. So just to, you know.
I had something I wanted to bring up with you guys that happened to me the other day where we had some workstations at a client that were showing issues of just non-responsiveness at different times. And randomly, we couldn't see anything that was obvious about it. But it was starting to happen to multiple workstations at their office. So it was starting to spread like a disease and and the client was starting to get frustrated. And I was trying to help here and there remotely for, I think it was a couple of days and couldn't see anything obvious. So I was in the middle of other clients as I'm remoting in. So I finally did some research and did a little digging. And as it turns out on these particular workstations, I'm not sure if either of you guys have mentioned this update in previous shows, but there's the security update for 10.11.6, the patch that specifically fixes an issue where a problem with the kernel can cause the Mac to be unresponsive.
Yeah, the supplemental update, right?
Yeah, yeah, which I didn't see at first, but it wasn't applied on these workstations. So I was like, oh my goodness, that's exactly what's happening here. So it was, you know, it was something that you should look for updates as an early part of the discovery. But once I found it, I was like, oh, brilliant. And then, so I figured, okay, now we got to deploy that to those few workstations that are having the problems.
Can I just interject? Did you have a window of ages, like when these machines were they all purchased at the same time or are they roughly the same vintage?
They are within about a year or so of each other. Yes.
So yeah. Can you ballpark the year?
Yeah. 2013 iMacs.
Perfect. Thanks.
So to go along with it, I decided, all right, let's run these updates, but let's be smart about this. Why don't we use our old friend Adagy? Or should I say new friend Adagy? Right. So I jumped into Adagy. I went into the listing for that client. And I looked at the 10.11.6 supplemental update. I selected it and it showed which devices needed it applied. I added it to my policy and deployed it to the policy and all the computers got the update, rebooted. And it was really a simple process as opposed to, you know, the sneakernet method of hopping around or doing it remotely by one computer at a time. And by morning, you know, I'd said, hey, guys, this problem is resolved. Have a look around. Let me know if there are any issues. But it was nice and clean and easy using Adagy to get it done.
Oh, that's a great story. Can you tell me when you did push that out to the Macs, were they being prompted to reboot right away or how did that work? What was like the deployment like?
Yeah, so I get what you can do, and I was doing a little bit of research on this, is they would check in within a half an hour to see if they need it. I chose the deploy now method. So within, I'd say maybe 2 minutes, the computers just started to apply and reboot. They just did a graceful shutdown, but none of the computers, this is one thing that I didn't test, is none of the computers had anything that needed to be saved. So I don't know what the behavior would have looked like there. That's an interesting one that I'd like to try, but didn't want to do it in this particular case.
And isn't that getting better anyway with, you know, like basically you can just quit an app now and it'll just like, even with unsaved changes in most apps, I'm pretty sure. Is that still the case with Word as well and Excel in the Office suite? Or is that only with, you know, more, I don't know.
I think apps? With Word, I can't speak. I'm trying to think of 2016, but I know with Word 2011, it'll say it'll stop the shutdown process if it needs to be saved.
Right, right. Like the old school method. But I feel like most apps these days handle, just being quit arbitrarily and automatically, saving. What am I trying to say? The saving the application state essentially.
Yeah, and you can, right, it'll recover the document if it quit, like, not gracefully, I guess we could say.
Yeah, but even, with a graceful quit, if there are unsaved changes, you'll just end up, like, if you have a document in TextEdit, you just put a bunch of edits into, you can just quit and then, reopen TextEdit later, and you still have an unsaved document, essentially, but it didn't stop you from quitting and reopening it.
But all in all, it was cool. Well, two things. One, it was great to find the issue as an obvious problem resolution to the problem they were having. And then two, as I'm getting to learn Adagy each day a little bit better, I'm like, oh great, this is a perfect opportunity to use a scenario where I have to apply this right away. And the management tool worked exactly as expected. So it was pretty sweet to get it done.
That is really great. And you could use the customer sentiment polling part of Adagy to, ask them the next day, how's your computer working now? That kind of thing, and see if anybody has any issues.
Yeah, that actually, I didn't think about that. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. Send them all the alerts. Say, happy or not happy. Tell me what you think.
Exactly. That's pretty neat. I've been seeing, I don't know if you guys have seen this, speaking of like machines going unresponsive, and I'm curious if this is taking the same kind of form. This is with 10, 11, 6 machines, and we've just noticed a pattern in the last few weeks where machines that have been left awake, like they're set to not sleep, they'll go to screensaver, and then the display will turn off. When later, let's say the night, night goes by, hours go by, whatever, and the client comes to like wake it up, they click the mouse or tap a key on the keyboard, and the screen lights up, but they've got essentially like a login window with a spinning beach ball, and they're just stuck. It never recovers. They just keep having the spinning weight cursor. Have you guys seen that issue at all? Do you know what I'm talking about?
At the login window, you said?
Yeah, typically.
Yes.
That's not this issue, right? You're talking like a hard kernel panic type situation, right?
Well, the situation that the supplemental update fixed?
Right.
Yeah, no, this was like working throughout the day and it causing an issue just randomly while doing work, no matter what application you were in or whatever. It wasn't necessarily just at the login window.
Would that have been a kernel panic? Like it goes to the, like it shows the curtain effect and, you get the white text and the black screen, or is it like the arrow freezes and the whole screen is locked up, or was it just a spinning beach ball?
It was a little bit of a spinning beach ball, and then at other times where it just completely locked up.
Okay.
So it would vary in severity, but both of them were those types of issues. It would not kernel panic, however, at least in our situations.
Okay. But then the issue I mentioned on the login window after being, after the display has been asleep or the machine, it's been on screensaver for a while, you've seen that issue as well?
Definitely. I mean, you've run across this recently?
We haven't really found a pattern other than realizing recently that these are all 10, 11 machines. So we're thinking we're going to upgrade one or two of them to Sierra and see if that resolves it. And depending on, we're going to start with a client that's kind of, this will have minimal impact on their workflow as far as upgrading to Sierra. And then, maybe one other, there's like three different clients where we're seeing this. And it's, it's just something I haven't really seen before. So I've seen it only in the last few weeks, but now we're seeing it more often. So I just can't put my finger on what's causing it. Well, maybe some follow-up on that after we've upgraded. We'll see if that does resolve it. But speaking of Sierra, I have a couple of Sierra tips. One is a tip via Cocktail. This is a company called Maintain, makes this software called Cocktail. We've been using it over the years for a while now. At one of our clients, we use it in particular on a fairly regular basis. And I get their newsletter, and I noticed this little tip in Sierra. But if you look in Finder Preferences under Advanced, there's a new option to keep folders on top when sorting by name. And this is what I call the Windows mode, because clients switching from Windows, they are used to just, I think that's the default on Windows. Like folders are just always at the top, and then you've got files, and that's, sorted alphabetically. And there used to be basically no way to do that. And clients who insisted on having some way to do that we would recommend just like, you know, putting in a special character. I forget what we would typically say. Like, I have one client who's using like one dash and then like the real name of the folder to sort the folders at the top of the list. That's sort of not very user-friendly. It's a little weird. So this is a really nice option. So yeah, it's right in there under Finder Preferences under Advanced. Keep folders on top when sorting by name is the option. And this counts as one of these, I should have known this, because I had this on the list to talk about on the show. And just today, a client asked me about it. And I was like, there's a way to do it. And she's like, that's okay. I don't, you know, and it was like one of these things that wasn't important, but I wish I had the thing at my fingertips, because it would have been a nice little, you know, wow kind of moment for them. There you go. One of the most confusing things in the Finder these days is like arrange by. I think we may have talked about this, but there's like arrange versus like sort, you know? And so you can like arrange by name, arrange by none, but then also, but sort by name. Like, it's just, you know, it's just like there's two different ways to basically get an alphabetical list. And I find that confusing. And then clients will go into like arrange by date, you know, date something, date last modified or whatever. And then they'll wonder, why is this not alphabetical? And then if you go to sort and you like sort by name, it doesn't actually sort by name. You have to like arrange by none and then sort by name. So it's just really, I find that whole thing, like arranging is nice because you can have date last open, for example, will show your documents you've worked on today and then yesterday and then previous 7 days. And those little categories are kind of convenient. But you kind of have to know about that whole arrange option versus sort and like what the distinction is between them.
Quick pop quiz, and it's just, you're the only person in the room right now.
All right.
How to bring emojis up if you're just like, let's say you're writing an email, for example, a keyboard shortcut to bring up emojis?
Oh, man, I don't know the shortcut.
Command, Control, Spacebar. Client was asking for a way. I don't use emojis, but just so that's clear. Right. But one of my clients.
For a friend, you needed to know this trick. Yeah, sure. I use them in a subject line for like our recent couple of newsletters. And sometimes a client will reply back, you know, to like the newsletter. Cause it's just, I don't know, people do email that way. They like look, they search for you, they find your last email to them and then they reply back with whatever the question is. Right. So sometimes it bubbles up to the top of my inbox. I kind of like the way they look in a subject line. You know, I'm not a big fan of the like winky face and like, you know, whatever, all the, just throwing those in there constantly. But you know, they can be fun in certain circumstances. In MailChimp, you can, you know, like put an emoji right in the subject line of the message. And like, we have this, you know, happy fall from SciMac, and we included some fall leaves and things like that. That was the last newsletter we sent. So that shows you how busy we've been, but yeah. One quick thing. And then I've got an Apple ID sort of tip. So if you are a Patreon supporter and you have not yet received your awesome temporary tattoo from Command Control Power, make sure we know your mailing address. Just get in touch and let us know your mailing address. A few people have not responded, and everyone else I think should have received their little temporary tattoo, all the rest of our Patreon supporters. So again, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters for supporting us. If you want to become a supporter, go to commandcontrolpower.com and click on support. And we really, really appreciate all the support we get from our fans. It helps us keep the show going all these years. It's been, man, how long? Like over 3 years now? It's awesome. So honestly, sorry. I don't know if we would have continued to do it all these years without the Patreon support. So thank you guys so much.
I agree 100%. Thanks to everyone who helps us out.
So have you, Sam, ever had to change your, you know, email address associated with your Apple ID for like iTunes, for example?
Not mine, because I've had the same at mac.com address forever, but I have had clients that have had to change that.
The most recent time this came up, I went in and I just kind of dove in and started changing stuff. And I did not follow Apple's, you know, specific instructions for this. They have a knowledge base article, you know, how to change your Apple ID. And I will link to this in the show notes. The very first step is sign out of every Apple service and device that uses your Apple ID. Very definitive.
Yeah.
Very good tip.
Seems like an important one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're very explicit. Like, there's no bones about it. You know, don't just do that first. And I think, you know, technically, logically, that makes a whole lot of sense. The most recent time I did this, I just dove in, I changed it in, you know, appleid.apple.com. And in 3 out of 4 cases, the device updated automatically. In one case, the device simply would not update. And the problem was so I thought, okay, no problem. That's the one exception, right? Why don't we just sign out of the, you know, Apple ID on that device, and then we'll just go ahead and change it, you know, sign back in with the new address. So this device in question happened to be an iPad. And of course, Find My iPad comes into play. So we couldn't sign out of the Apple ID because we're being prompted for the password, but we're being prompted for the password associated with the old Apple ID email address. And there's no way to change it. And you'd think that Apple would, like, I don't know, like, you know, maybe there's a way technically to realize that, like, this address is the former, you know, address associated with this Apple ID. And, you know, maybe it could just automatically kind of fix that or whatever. But it doesn't let you edit it, and it doesn't do the right thing. It just errors out. It just doesn't like the password. And therefore you cannot sign out of iCloud. So the solution that I came up with, you know, to my own, the problem I had created, was to go back into appleid.apple.com and change the email address back to the original email address. And that can get really ugly because the email address has to be one you have access to. Like, if you're doing this because the person, the client, has lost access to the email address in question, like the old address was for their old company that they're no longer with, and that email address doesn't even exist, right? You go in and you try to change it to that address, even if you used to use that address just, you know, 2 hours ago, it needs you to verify that you own that email address for obvious reasons. And so if you can't receive an email sent to that address, you're kind of out of luck. Luckily, in this case, this was just a sort of cosmetic change. You know, the client still had access to both addresses. So I was able to change it back to the original address, the old address, you know, verify that address. That then allowed me to sign out, like I should have done in the first place, from that iPad, from that ID on that iPad, because now the address was actually valid, the one that was embedded in the iPad. And then finally, after confirming like all devices are signed out from this, you know, from this iCloud address, go back and change, you know, the rest of Apple's instructions, basically sign into the Apple ID account page, edit your Apple ID, change your email address, verify it. Maybe you need to answer security questions, whatever. And then finally, you know, sign back into all the devices with your new Apple ID. So,
you were fortunate.
Yes,
you were fortunate.
Exactly.
That could have been really ugly if they didn't have access to that account.
Yeah. I mean, what, you know, what would you do in that case? I mean, you could plead the case with Apple and say, I screwed up and, you know, what can we do here? But, you know, there's a pretty good chance that, I mean, I don't know what would have happened. Like, I guess the device might have been bricked, I think, worst case scenario.
I mean, I'm sure support could have helped if you prove security information and stuff, but it's on you at that point, because then they might need to know that this was you that started this situation, and it could just reflect upon you. So thankfully you had an easy out, but yeah, it could go south, because then if you have to contact AppleCare or anything like that, that's just time that's wasted.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but I would assume, yeah, the device would be bricked temporarily, but I would assume that they could get you. With proof of ownership and stuff, you could get yourself out of a jam.
No,
but
that's true. Yeah. So you just might have to, go to the Apple store, or actually have the client, even worse, you know, go to the Apple store or maybe prove it to Apple Care or something like that. But yeah, that would have been embarrassing and a hassle. And so I got pretty lucky. Public service announcement. Any listeners out there, if you're going to change your client's Apple ID, just make sure to sign out from all devices first before you get yourself into a jam.
If the devices are enrolled in an MDM, you could bypass activation lock if you did have a brick device. I mean, this situation might be a little bit different, but if you did get into one of those situations where you had a bricked iPad with activation lock enabled, an MDM could bypass it if it's enrolled.
Right, but it would have been enrolled up front, right, before.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
Worked my magic on the thing, right?
I have a small Apple ID story without a resolution.
Teaser sounds good. Let's do it.
this is a weird one. I mean, I think two shows ago, I had that very strange situation with a client that had a device signed in to their iCloud account and a device listed in Find My iPhone that was a rogue device.
Yeah.
We have a family that shares iCloud family sharing setup. They share a calendar. There are a couple of family events that are on there a couple times a year that are school events, created by the mom and the rest of the family see them. Let's just call this like a chorus concert or something, right? Mm-hmm. What happened was another family event for a chorus concert, two of them for different times of year, showed up in the family calendar as an invitation to one of the parents. And it came from an address in iCloud that neither of them had. Now, this sounds like one of those, you know, rogue calendar invites, but there's a little bit more to it in that, say this was, we'll call it webcal@icloud.com was the name of this account. If I look, that's where the invitation came from, and the mother was invited to this event. I logged into iCloud of each of the parents to see if there was an alias for either one that was called this WebCal account, and there wasn't. I looked on the father's iCloud.com, went into his calendar, and saw that the event originated there, meaning that was the one that created it, and the invites went to other people. Essentially, it appears that this, I'll call it a rogue alias, within the iCloud family sharing account created an event that invited others in the family, but no one has this alias. And as a matter of fact, I went into the father's account and attempted to create that alias with the exact same name, and it let me. What? So it didn't say this exists already. It doesn't say webcal@icloud.com exists. It just said, here you go. Here's your new alias.
Wow.
I can't sort this out. It doesn't appear to have come from the outside, because what I was able to do is log into the father's iCloud account and delete the event, and it let me. The invitees couldn't delete the event. They could just ignore it. But I was able to log into the father's account and remove it. So this happened with two different family events for these chorus concerts that were within close proximity to the real dates of their events, but these were not correct. It all boils down to the fact that there was an event created inside their iCloud account, but the alias didn't belong to anybody in the family.
Where does it show that alias in the created event?
If I go to the event itself, it'll show the organizer, this is how it's listed, and then the invitees. And you should be able to select the organizer and see the address it belongs to.
Yeah, that's really weird. So it's almost like the alias existed when the event was created, and then the alias was deleted, you know, so that you could then recreate it, you know, per your test there. It just never existed, but then why would it be shown there?
Right. And this happened in two different times. One time they blew it off back in December. It happened, and it happened again for another event. There's no explaining it right now. I'm hoping someone has some magic sauce that says, oh yeah, this is what happened, but I can't place any logic into it to explain it away.
The alias, is it really something along the lines of like webcal@icloud? Like maybe it's an internal iCloud thing that you shouldn't ever see, but that it's being exposed to you?
Okay. It's web, their first name. We'll say web Chris and a number.
Yeah.
So it was webchris10@icloud.com. Let's just use that. That's how it was listed. And nobody has that alias in their account.
So
weird. I can't figure it out. I feel like I don't have a good answer, nor do I have a halfway decent explanation for it. So I'm hoping someone out there can come up with some magical answer.
It happened twice, you know, that it, like the first time you can explain anything as a fluke, but when it happens again, you know, separated by months or something, it's kind of like, well, there's got to be something going on, but what is it? You know?
Yeah. And both parents are like, I didn't do this. This is weird.
And it's the wrong date. Like it's close to the date, but not quite. That's also really strange.
Yeah. And their invites, and on the family calendar, they don't send invites. They just put it on the calendar.
Right.
So that's what makes it even stranger. It's on the family calendar and the other attendees are invited to the event, which doesn't even, it's not necessary to do that.
Yeah, that's strange. And just like the fact that the alias is some weird thing that actually didn't exist at the time that it was showing as the, as the organizer, that's just baffling. It almost makes me want to say like, delete the like alias that you did create and then like email the alias and see if anybody responds, you know, like, or see if you get a bounce message or something. Like, I don't know. Maybe iCloud got their wires crossed, so to speak. Like, it actually does exist somehow. I don't know.
And that's not a bad idea to actually send a message.
Please get in touch with me. Like, if you're out there, web Chris, you know, whatever. It's really strange. I mean, because it could be, like you said, one of those rogue things, but you'd think if it ended in at iCloud.com that iCloud's own spam filter would be like, well, this person doesn't exist, so we're not going to deliver that one, you know?
Yeah, I actually, while we were talking, just tried to send a message from my iCloud account to that iCloud account, and it said illegal alias.
So how does it, yeah, how does it let the calendar invite be created with an, in a, you know, by an organizer that doesn't exist?
Right. Strange. And again, I can't explain it away as a rogue, one of those rogue calendar invites, because the father seemed to have owned it, because I was able to go in there and then delete it from his iCloud.com calendar.
Right. I guess the only other thing I would like pursue would be, you know, are there any devices that like you guys aren't telling me about? You know, are there any weird, like, you know, are you logging in from some older iPad that like thinks that this alias exists? Or are you, you know, something like that, or some web service where, you know, that you gave your iCloud password to at some point, or, you know, something like that. Actually, that's another one you could look at, is the, like the devices list in iCloud settings. We like when you go to go to iCloud.com and go into settings and like look at the active devices there. Is there anything like weird about that? You know,
I actually did do that. Nothing odd there. That's actually how I found out the other issue with the rogue device with that other client. That's where we went to see. But in this case, there was nothing. All the devices were accounted for, and didn't, you know, and were in current use and didn't have that alias on there. So.
Well, speaking of these weird kind of rogue Apple ID iCloud stuff, I have a client who's been getting a prompt. A device in such and such location wants to use your iCloud two-factor authentication, where it wants you to tap allow on your iPhone, for example, and then it gives you a six-digit code you've got to type in to allow the login on the other device, the new device. He's right now in Florida, and he has a Mac in Connecticut. Messages saying that there's a device, you know, such and such Mac. I forget exactly what it says. He hasn't actually sent it to me, but he kind of tells me about it. Freeport, New York, something like that, somewhere in New York. And the address was basically, it's an address that I've seen come up where if you're connected to a cell tower, like across Long Island Sound, you know, you'll get like an IP address in that location. Or even like local ISPs, you've probably noticed this too, like sometimes the geolocation based on IP address is getting like less accurate. Like they'll use IPs from like, you know, the next state over or something like that. So I've kind of like tried to explain that to him, and it's good to hear you confirm that that's, you know, you're seeing that as well. but you know, it still doesn't explain like what device. I'm thinking maybe it's one in his home in Connecticut, like a device that he left behind that might be, for whatever reason, like waking up and trying to log into iCloud, and he needs to allow it. You know, and that's the best explanation, because otherwise it means his password is compromised, and you know, someone is just kind of intermittently trying to log in and hoping they trick him into, I don't know what, like, you know, emailing someone the six-digit code while they're waiting to like, but then they don't have access to his email. So I don't see what the scam would actually be.
Yeah.
You know, because he, like, you would need to know the code, and they're not going to get it if he's, you know, across the country. So
it does sound like one of those situations where it's just listing him in the wrong location, right? Is that the best explanation?
Possibly. Or? But I mean, have you ever seen something like that so far away? Like, if he's in Florida and, you know, he's getting, it's an address, like, IP address in New York. Like, I could see Connecticut versus New York.
Oh, I see. Okay. So I thought in your theory that one of his Connecticut devices was ringing as New York.
Yeah, that's still my working theory, but like I still can't explain why a device in Connecticut, like, you know, is basically like trying to wake up randomly and, I don't know, like, you know, trying to check it, log into iCloud.
Right. Like, why would it just pop up and say, hey, I'm going to check in now.
Right.
Or log in, rather.
Yeah. So I think we're probably just going to change his password out of a precaution.
Yeah. Probably a good idea. Yeah, with that IP address thing, we've seen that recently. I had a client ask me, hey, every time I go shopping on my website, it tells me I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts. And even if I change my settings to say this is my zip code, it goes back. And I'm like, all right, let's do what is my IP. And what is my IP showed her in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Right.
So I'm like, there you go.
Yeah, not much you can do about that. I mean, I guess you can. Right. There are organizations you can, I think, petition to like update their database or something. But
Hey, before we go, I want to make sure that I give a shout out to ACES conference, which we'll be attending on May 31st to June 1st of this year, and make sure we let all our listeners know to check out acesconf.com if you're interested in attending. We're going to be there. We're going to have a great live show there, and we still have a great promo code you can use. If you go to sign up, just use the promo code COMMAND, and that will take off 10% of whatever the current ticket price is. So please have a look, and we hope to see you guys there.